The views expressed on this podcast are only those of the individuals featured on the show and do not in any way reflect the official policy of the United States government.
You are listening to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. We believe wealth isn't just about finances and money. It includes health, relationships, and anything else that makes you excited to get up in the morning. We interview members of the foreign affairs community to see how they're building wealth, both personally and financially, no matter where they're posted. This is your host, Tanya Salseth. Let's get to today's show. Welcome to the Embassy Wealth Podcast. And today I am super excited to be joined by Rachel Richards. And I have actually been bugging Rachel for over a year to be on this show. So you guys are in for a super special treat. And for those of you that don't know Rachel, she is actually the author of two books, which you should definitely check out. One of them is Money Honey, a simple seven-step guide for getting your financial together. This is a family show here. And the second one is Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement. And one of the reasons I asked, well, one of the many reasons I asked Rachel on the show is that she actually retired at the ripe old age of, drumroll please, 27. 27, people. So I had to invite her on the show to figure out what are her big secrets and what wisdom does she have to share with us. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad we finally got it worked out. I have been so looking forward to talking to you.
Likewise. Rachel and I met at a conference and I had always had her in back of my mind and I was like, oh my God, she'd be perfect for the show. And I'm so, so glad we finally figured it out. So yay. Yay. So can I just ask, who retires at 27? Like, how is this a thing? Like, are you a trust fund baby? Like, how did you do that? Like, this does not happen to most normal people. So what's your story?
Yeah, I'm a weirdo for sure.
I'm a weirdo too. So
I love that you asked that though, because I do like to clarify. I do get that a lot. And I like to clarify, I am not a trust fund baby. And I never made six figures from a job or career. I actually started off making $32,000 and then $42,000 and then $36,000. So by no means was I raking it in. High level overview is that I started investing in real estate in 2017. Mm-hmm. That is when I bought my first rental property with my ex-husband. And later that year, I published my first book. I self-published my first book, Money Honey. So I had these two passive income streams, rental income and royalty income. And I focused on growing those as much as I possibly could over the next few years. So fast forward to 2019, by then I was making over $10,000 a month in passive income, mostly from my rental properties by then. And so I quit my job in 2019 at the age of 27 and became financially independent. And now I'm making over 20 grand in passive income from various sources, but that is kind of my journey at a high level.
So that is a really short explanation because you just said I quit my job in 2 years with rental properties, and I think there are a lot of people on this or that are listening to this show that would be like, that is not possible. How is that possible in 2 years? You know, the market has changed. There's always a reason why people can't do what you did. And is it possible to do what you did now?
I think so, because I didn't have anything special going for me, in my opinion. You know, again, I didn't come from wealthy parents. I didn't have my parents' help. I even paid my way through college. They didn't help me pay for school. I sold Cutco knives to pay for college. And I only started with $10,000 in savings. And that was a lot of money to me at the time. That was everything I had saved over the course of several years. It was my life savings. And in 2017, my ex and I each had 10 grand saved, and we pooled that together to get to our $20,000 down payment to buy our first $100,000 property. Now, I know everyone in California is thinking, $100,000 property? I can't even buy a parking spot for that amount of money.
No, for like a cardboard box under a bridge. And even then, like, yeah. The land would be worth more, that little piece that the cardboard box is sitting on.
Yes, exactly. So definitely one of the advantages I had is that I invested in an affordable cash flowing city. I was investing in Louisville, Kentucky, where I happened to live at the time. So that was an advantage. And I do encourage people to consider investing out of state because there are still properties that are 100 grand, 150 grand, 200 grand, even in 2023, even in this market.
Agree. Yep.
You have to be willing to not only invest out of state, but look off market to find deals. That was the deal I found off market.
And how does one do that when you're living in a different state? I mean, it sounds like you were there in Kentucky at the time. So wouldn't you say it's easier to find off market stuff than, you know, when you're living there? I mean, how do you do it if you're out of state, for example?
I would say it's easier for sure, but not impossible, because you can network, you can make connections with people, you can send out a college kid to drive for dollars or hire, you know, investor and pay them some money to drive for dollars for you. There's so many methods that you can find probate leads, pre-foreclosure leads. A lot of these you can look up on the county records online, put up bandit signs, again, hire like a college kid to put up bandit signs. Look up the expired, canceled, withdrawn listings on the MLS and follow up with the agents. That's actually how I found my first duplex. You can network. There's probably 8, 9, 10, 11 ways to find off-market deals, all of which you can do out of state.
And I think, you know, the key here is that people are like, oh, well, I can't find off-market deals. And my question is always, well, what are you doing to find them? Because it does actually take work, right? It takes effort. It takes doing things that maybe you don't know how to do or you haven't done before. But honestly, everything is on the internet nowadays. So I feel like there isn't really a good excuse other than like, you just don't want to try, right? And like, I hate to say it that way, but all of this is figure outable. It's doable. And it's, I think the difference is the people that go out and do these things versus those that just say, oh, that's somebody else. It's, you know, that person does it. If you figure out how to do it, you just do it. Eventually you will have success. It sounds like that was your case in terms of finding something off market.
I agree. And I think the problem right now with a hard time finding deals is that most people are looking on the MLS or on Zillow or working with an agent.
Which is where everybody's looking because it's easy.
Yes, it's too competitive. You don't have to get off your couch. That's what everyone's doing. And if you want to find a great deal in this market, you have to be willing to do what no one else is willing to do. And that's what it's going to take. You have to be willing to find these off-market deals. It's going to be a lot more work. It's going to take more effort and more time, but that's how you're going to find these diamonds in the rough. That's how I find properties that literally have 20% cash on cash ROI. And that's why my portfolio is so strong and why I was able to retire so quickly.
And for those of you, ROI is return on investment. So if she's investing a dollar, she's getting a 20% return on that dollar, right? Which is fabulous. I mean, who can get a 20% return anywhere, like on anything right now? I mean, other than like super risky ventures. But are you still investing in real estate now?
I am. I got to a point in 2018 where my ex and I, we hit our goal. We hit our goal of cash flow and passive income. We wanted to make 10 grand a month in passive income from our rentals. And we stopped acquiring real estate. And a lot of people thought we were crazy. They were like, well, why stop? You could build an empire. You could have 200 doors. You could have 250 doors. And
all the gurus.
Yeah. And I was pretty proud of us because we knew our goal. We wanted to have enough to be financially independent and not have to work anymore. And we stopped buying property then. And I'm pretty proud of us because you can always move the goalpost further, right? But I'm proud of us for sticking to our guns because it was not ever this passion. It was a means to an end. We wanted to achieve financial independence so that we could then spend our time doing what we loved. We wanted to travel. We wanted to hike. We wanted to go to the gym more, just spend more time having this free time. And we didn't want to get caught up in becoming these huge landlords that had this big empire to manage. So I really am proud that we didn't give into this when is enough enough mindset, and we did stop. And then we sold most of our portfolio in 2021, which I can certainly go into. And then of course we had a divorce last year. Mm-hmm. So then our portfolio was further divided. So I walked out of that with just a duplex. And then I was like, I felt a little bit financially insecure again, which was weird because I knew I had so much money by then. But now at this point, I'm just looking to build up my portfolio a little bit more and continue investing in syndications. So that is what I'm working on right now.
So I think it's very interesting that you bought your first rental property and then wrote your first book. Was Money Honey the first book?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And how did that come about? Because, I mean, you know, there's the naysayers out there like, oh, you're only in your 20s. Like, what do you know about anything? Like, you bought one property and yet you wrote a book, and it's actually really popular. Like, if you guys go look on Amazon, like 5-star reviews, like literally over 1,000 5-star reviews, right? So, Talk to us a little bit about your process of publishing that book. And like, because honestly, at that age, I would not have been like, and I'm going to publish a book about financial stuff, because I feel like, oh, there's so much out there. What was sort of your thinking in terms of putting that book out into the world?
Yeah, Money Honey was, it's crazy to me thinking about the success it's had, and I still can't believe it. But I always wanted to write a book, and I used to be a financial advisor. So this is where it came from. I had a passion for helping people manage their money, learn to budget, learn how to invest in the stock market. And that's where my background first came from. Since then, I've really taught more about real estate investing, but the book was about personal finance. Mm-hmm. So I started writing it in 2017, and it was a passion project at the time. It was just something I felt compelled to do. It in no way factored into my path to early retirement. I just didn't think it was going to make money, right? I thought the money I invested launching the book, I thought I wasn't even going to make it back. So I was like, okay, what's the amount I'm comfortable with losing? And I was like, I could invest $600 into writing this book, and I'm fine if I lose that, whatever. So that's how I started writing the book. And then, of course, to my surprise, I launched it, and it really resonated with female millennials. The idea I had at the time when I wrote Money Honey is all my family and friends came to me for financial advice. And I loved that. I love to help people. And at the same time, I thought, well, why aren't they going out and learning about this on their own? And then I had this aha moment and I realized, oh yeah, personal finance is boring, right? No wonder people don't like to learn about it. It's overwhelming, it's intimidating, it's complex. So I thought to myself, how can I make this topic sassy and fun and simple? And that's where the idea for the book came from. So I published it, it took off. I made $600 in that first month, and then like $1,000. And then I was making $1,500 a month, and I've made more and more every month since then. And I still can't believe it, but it's really now been one of my very consistent and profitable passive income streams.
I love that you said sassy and personal finance in the same sentence, because not a
right, an oxymoron.
And I think that's part of the success of the book, right? Because you are talking to a certain audience, and that audience really is not, they don't want to go and look at stock reports, or I mean, not that anyone reads the newspaper anymore, but you know, it's a new, fresh take on it, and it can be fun and it can be interesting and it can be like, hey, here's how I like plan it so that I can get the things I want in life and like have a great financial future. And like you said, I think there is this underlying sort of theme in the personal finance community and even in real estate investments of like, and you can have an empire and you can have 100 doors, and there's this constant push, 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 push. Like you need more, you need more. And I think it's honestly fantastic that you had your number. You're like 10,000, I'm good. And then I get to do what I want, because that's why most people do it in the first place. And if you lose sight of that, I mean, so congrats to you, first of all, for having the foresight of saying, okay, this is enough, right? Because I think we do struggle with that, especially in American culture of like, what is enough? Like, do I need more? Do I want more? What's enough, right? And you had a very specific idea. You got to your goal. You got to your goal early. You were aggressive about it. And then, you know, you created something that other people could benefit from. So fabulous. Love it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And yeah, and I'm still working. A lot of people are like, well, Rachel, you're not retired. And maybe I need to stop using that word, because I'm financially independent, but I still choose to work. It's just that I now work because I want to, not because correct. I have to. And it makes a huge difference. Like, yep. I still wake up at 6:30 or 7 a.m. every morning, but now it's not to an alarm to go into a job every day. Now it's because I want to, and I get to spend my time doing the things that I love. And that's what makes a huge difference to me.
And that is the goal, really, because I'm in the same position. And people are like, well, why do you spend so much time like building companies and doing these new ventures? I'm like, because I like to, and it's fun. And like you, I don't set my alarm. I actually wake up naturally because I'm excited about what I'm doing that day. And I'm like, oh, I get to do this or that, or get to talk to this person. So I think that is such a huge benefit of figuring your financial out early, right? So that you can actually get to where you want to go. So let me ask you, so you write Money Honey, you invest in your first duplex. How did you get from that first duplex? And in 2 years, then you're like, all right, peace out, I'm retiring, people. Like, how many properties? How did you kind of scale it? Because I think people figure out, okay, I can get one property, but then they're like, oh, I'm getting only $200 or $300 a month in cash flow. How do I get from that to like the 10 grand that she's talking about?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. We went from 0 to 38 doors in, yeah, in about 2.5 years. It was pretty quick. So how did we scale so quickly? It came down to a few things. And we already talked about we were living in a good city. It was affordable. It's not like we're buying million-dollar houses in California.
Yikes.
We bought properties that were the most expensive one was 430,000. Most of them were around 200 grand. So it was six buildings we bought, 38 doors total. So it was great that we lived in a more affordable place. Another thing is we were saving half of our income. And although I never made six figures, by 2017, my ex was making right around 100. We both got big raises. He started making right around 100, and I got a big raise where I was making 75 grand. So combined, we were making a lot and we were saving half of that. So each month, we were saving something like 5 or 7 grand a month. So we were able to come up with down payments pretty quickly by that point. And then another thing, I think this is really the key factor, is that I had my real estate license. I did not have it for the purpose of having clients that I helped buy and sell houses. It was for my own purposes as an investor. So on every transaction, I would represent myself as the buyer's agent. And that meant at closing, I would be one of the realtors on the transaction and I would be paid a commission. Sometimes it would be $2,000, but sometimes it would be 10 or 12 grand that I would be paid. And that was an enormous chunk of money that I could put towards the down payment on the next property. So that helped us scale very quickly. And what was the last piece of it? We did 50% savings rate, affordable market, real estate license. That might have been the three things. If I think of another thing, I'll tell you. But that's really how we got to those properties so quickly.
And it's funny because that is exactly the same reason I got my real estate license. It was never to build a real estate team. It was really, I'm an investor. I want to get in and out of properties quickly. And honestly, I love looking at homes. So, like, even this weekend, I went and looked at a bunch of homes that, I mean, just because it's fun for me. But I think that is a way that you can save money if, and especially if you're in the country, right? Because a lot of our listeners are overseas. But even for those that are overseas, there are some benefits to having a real estate license. I would say, you know, check the fees if you're, you know, thinking about, you know, getting a real estate license, because sometimes the fees that, you know, to do your continuing education, to pay to the real estate board, to pay for, you know, Century Lock, which is the lock boxes that you get in and out of, add those all up. And if you're doing at least one transaction or two a year, it probably makes sense. If you're doing one transaction every other year, it probably doesn't make that much sense. But, you know, add up the math to see if it's worth the cost savings and the time and the energy that you're going to put into it. I did it anyway because I thought it was interesting and I wanted access to MLS because I wanted to dive through the data and do exactly what you did, Rachel, which is dig around and like off-market stuff, figure out, ooh, that sold this. So, but I think it could be a winning strategy for people.
I agree. I always tell people if you're going to do at least one transaction a year, it's normally going to cover the cost of your license. My license costs me about $1,000 to $1,500 per year to maintain. So normally, if I'm going to buy or sell one property, it covers that cost. And I thought of the other piece of it too that helped us scale is that we didn't give in to lifestyle creep, meaning every
Very
property
important.
we bought, we wouldn't be making cash flow on it. And we were so frugal this whole time. We were so diligent about saving money, living within our means, saving as much as we possibly could. So all of our friends who were making less than us, but would buy new cars, upgrade their lifestyles. And then, you know, I'm driving my used Honda Civic that's 8 years old. Like, we're living differently so that we can retire early. That was our whole goal. And when we bought that first duplex, it was cash flowing $500 a month. That's how
Nice.
much it was profiting. So yeah, super exciting. We were like, yes, we did. It could have been so easy for us to be like, we made it. Now I can get a new car. Now I can whatever, move into a bigger
Can afford
place.
a new bigger payment.
Yeah.
Yep.
And instead of that, we were like, no, we're going to save 100% of this cash flow and save that, add that to our savings each month so we can buy the next property more quickly. And that's what we kept doing. When we bought that next property, which was a big step up, that one was cash flowing $2,500 a month. So it would snowball so quickly. And at some point after the second or third property, it wasn't a matter of like, how are we going to save for the next down payment? Because it snowballed by then so quickly. And the money was just coming in very fast at that point. So that was the last piece of it.
And that's the thing too that a lot of like the investors that we work with, like they buy one property and usually the first year is when the property is like the most expensive because you're learning about the property, right? There's a lot of like expenses because you're getting to know it. You're like, oh, this thing needs a repair. This thing needs repair. So usually the first year people are like, and and where is all this passive income that I'm supposed to get in cash flow? But the longer you hang on to it, the better it gets. And it starts to snowball. And at some point you look at it and you're like, wow, what just happened, right? And it sounds like that was the case for you too. Like, you know, you had your 38 doors, right? And they were all coming in. Talk to me a little bit about, okay, so you had this, I mean, for most people, this is an empire. It's 38 doors is an empire. Let's face it. You have one book, your second book comes out where you have the 38 doors. So you're actually, are you managing all these properties yourself or how are you doing this?
Oh, that's a great question. Cause I have, what do I have a story for you?
multiple stories.
I never want it to sound like everything went well and we had this amazing story and all this money.
That's never how it works.
Yeah. Cause of course I feel like I did everything wrong the whole way. I mean, so many mistakes were made. We lost money. I made mistakes. So anyways, we at some point hired a property manager because when we were doing this, we were both still working full time. We were acquiring properties, managing our tenants. I was writing a book in the evenings all around our full-time jobs. It was intense.
Underachievers, so clearly.
Yeah, we were lazy. at some point when we had, I think it was around 26 doors, we couldn't do it anymore. It became unmanageable.
Yeah.
So we're like, let's find a property manager. And of course, I'm set in my frugal ways. So we find this couple, and this couple, husband and wife couple, had already been working for us doing things like yard work, maintenance, cleaning. And they were some of the hardest working people we knew. They always went above and beyond. So we figured, why not hire them as employees of our company and make them the property managers? And we'll save some money rather than hiring these expensive property management companies. That was our thought, right? You can see where I'm going
with this. I'm laughing here, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, yeah, it sounds like a win-win, right? It was not. It was a win-lose. They won. We lost. So one weekend when my ex went to collect the rent from the on-site lockboxes, he noticed a lot of rent money was missing.
Uh-oh.
And it wasn't just a tenant or two paying late. It was a significant amount. Come to find out, this couple had stolen $6,000 in rent income from us just that weekend. And we found out they'd been squatting in the quote unquote vacant rooms. Yes.
Oh,
and
no.
Units in our properties. Yes. And it was horrifying because we trusted them. They'd been in our house, like our own personal house. And I was just, I mean, it was so gut-wrenching. I remember thinking, I want to quit this. What am I doing? What are we thinking? Of course, you have that whole cycle, spiral. And of course, here I am today. But it was absolutely awful. And the moral of the story is that being cheap can cost you a lot more in the long run. If we had hired a reputable, licensed, insured property management company and one of their employees had done that to us, they would have been liable for the damages, not us.
Yep.
So this is not the place to cut corners. And that goes for everyone you hire as you're investing in real estate, your CPA, your attorney, your contractor. The cheapest option is rarely the best option.
Amen.
And I will say, I used to feel so discouraged about that mistake. And I felt like such a failure. Whenever I made a mistake, I felt like such a failure. And maybe some of you listening feel that way too. Like when you make a mistake, you failed. But I came across this acronym. I don't know who came up with this. That FAIL stands for first attempt in learning. When you fail, you've made your first attempt in learning. So it's not a bad thing. It's almost like you've made a tuition payment into your own education. And you're never going to make that same mistake again. Really, when you fail, quote unquote, it's a good thing. You become a stronger and a wiser investor. So it's a really, really great thing.
And I have had my fair share of fails, as it will. And I welcome them, actually, because it just means that I'm getting to where I need to go faster. Because you know that at a certain point on the journey, failure is inevitable and it's part of the process. Because you haven't done it before, right? And I mean, you can get mentors, you can get people to coach you. But at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. You have to make the decisions. You have to move forward. And sometimes we don't always make the right decision. I've certainly been in that situation as well. But it's nice that that you mentioned that, because I think sometimes people are so afraid of getting started because of the, you know, what they perceive as, I'm going to fail because I don't know what I'm doing, right? Did you, in your journey, did you rely on mentors? Did you have people that helped you? Like, how did you figure out how to do all of this stuff?
I wish, because when I started, I felt like I was in this isolated bubble in Louisville, Kentucky, where I didn't know that these people existed who wanted to retire early and who wanted to invest in real estate. And I didn't find my people until later. And I didn't know that there were courses and coaches and people on Instagram. I just didn't know it existed. That's why I made so many mistakes. You know, I didn't have mentors and people to help me along the way. So I kind of figured it all out as I went. I read a ton of books. I guess I would say my mentors were the authors, the books that I read. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, you know, Robert Kiyosaki. I read so many books about real estate investing. There's another book, Hold, by Steve Chater, that I really loved, who talks a lot about how to analyze rental properties. So those were really my mentors. I also took a job at one point in the real estate industry where I was working with a guy who flipped properties, and I learned a lot then. And then the process of getting my real estate license was a lot more education. So I did a lot on my own. And I will say that I think it's worth it when you can find a good mentor who is very experienced, who cares about you, who has integrity. I do think it's worth it to invest in something like that. Because what you're doing is you're going to be able to get somewhere faster with fewer mistakes. And yes. If I knew that that option existed, I probably would have done that. But I didn't know, you know? And I was stubborn. I had to figure it all out on my own.
Ladies right here. Oh my gosh. We have that in common. But it, you know.
And I have that cheap mindset. Again, that's something I'm still working on. I was too cheap as well for that. So I chose the hard route, did it my own, made a ton of mistakes and messed up. And now here I am.
Yeah. And I think I have exactly the same experience because just like when I started, I mean, I think I had, I don't know, $3,000-$4,000. I can't remember exactly, but it was less than $5,000 in an old car when I joined the Foreign Service. And that was, you know, 2008. And I was also of the very frugal mindset of, because I had come from, you know, family that's what they did. They saved because, you know, my parents were both from backgrounds where it's like, oh, you have to save because you just don't know what's going to happen. Right. So I do think that that is a really key proponent at the beginning. You have to have some money to invest. You can't invest air, right? So you saved up for your down payments. I also saved up for down payments. And then you invest and then you earn some more and you earn some more. I think it's really key at the beginning for those of you that are listening. And honestly, our listeners are in a great position because they're overseas, like not having to pay utilities or rent. And so they can actually accelerate that process a lot faster than the average person that's in the United States that has to pay rent and utilities and their gym and their phone and all these other good things that get paid for overseas. So they actually have an opportunity to, like I did when I was in the Foreign Service, actually accelerate that purchasing if they do real estate, for example, much faster or any other kind of investment. So yes, I think you and I have a lot of similarities in our story.
Yeah, I love that. I love being overseas too, because same thing. I actually don't own a car. I've been living out of Airbnbs for so long. So when I'm overseas, I save more money than when I'm in the US. And it's such a big opportunity. So I can definitely relate.
Yes. So then you are working on your second book at night, Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement. How is that different from your first book?
Okay. So when I began approaching my retirement, and this was in 2019, and I knew I was going to quit my job, all these people were like, what are you talking about? You're 27. Like, what do you mean you're retiring? How would you have $10,000 a month in passive income? So I started getting all these questions about it. And I realized there was this big need for how I was able to do this. What is passive income? Because passive income was not talked a lot about 4 years ago. It was this new concept. So I realized people didn't know what this was. There was a lot of misconceptions around it. Is this a get-rich-quick scheme? How do you do this? I felt like it was talked a lot about as if it was some kind of scam, right? And so I wanted to clarify, what is this? What does it really take to create passive income? And what are all the different kinds? Because unbeknownst to some people, it's not just about real estate investing. There's a whole world of ways to create passive income, and you don't have to be a landlord to do it. So I became obsessed with it. I learned all the different ways. I created a bunch of different types of passive income stream myself. And then I figured, okay, people want to know, so I'm going to write a book about it. And that's how the second book came about.
So if you don't mind me asking, how many passive income streams do you have currently, more or less?
Oh, you know, I need to look into that. The last time I think I counted or looked, I had 8 or 9 passive income streams. And Some of them are rental properties, syndications, print on demand, affiliate income, dividends, interest. And I know there's a couple more I'm forgetting because that's six. So I can't remember all of them, but those are a few.
And for the listeners, I think it's important to think about money in this way of like, how many income streams do you have, right? If you just have your job, you've got one. That's it. So if you have your job and maybe, you know, and you're counting on like maybe pension, all those other things, yes, that's going to come on at a certain point. But then do you have a rental property? That's another income stream, right? And you mentioned affiliate income. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Because we've had some people on the show that have written books before in the Foreign Service community or that do, you know, kind of side hustles or something. But talk to us a little bit about affiliate income, for example. What is that?
Affiliate income is where you can get paid off of selling somebody else's products or services. Mm-hmm. And this is a passive income stream for me now, just because I do have a platform and an online presence, and I have affiliate links for other people's courses, for other people's books, just for Amazon products. Anyone can go set up an Amazon affiliate account and then link to any Amazon product. And if that link is out there somewhere and someone clicks on it, you can get paid a very, very small royalty. So that's how that works. So every month I make anywhere between $400 and $900 from affiliate income. And I don't even know where it comes from anymore because I just have links out there everywhere. But it's a really nice extra bonus. And that is how I make money from affiliate income.
Fantastic. So it's really just if you have a web presence, if you're out there, people are, you know, either going to your website or maybe your social media feeds, and then they're clicking on links that either you recommend or are somewhere like embedded on something that you're managing. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, you could have a blog, you could have a website, you could have a TikTok or an Instagram, and it can be, it doesn't have to be books or courses. It could be a shirt or any product on Amazon or anything that has affiliate links enabled.
Okay. So like if, for example, I'm just throwing out ideas here. Like if you reviewed books for a little website and you said, hey, here's a link to click on the book, then you could potentially make it that way.
Exactly.
I don't think we've had anyone on the show that does it, but it's just a nice little bonus of something for those of you who want, you know, something a little bit, little side hustle-y. That's yet another option, right?
Yeah, because people ask me all the time, hey, do you have a recommendation for a book about this subject or a book about this subject? So whenever I give recommendations out on my Instagram or on email or wherever, I put an affiliate link. So now I'm getting paid to give those recommendations.
Fantastic. And you've built quite a following, actually. Talk to us a little bit about that, because obviously the books help, right? But how do you market that? How do you become somebody in the sphere, right? That like people are paying attention, people are listening to, because you have quite a following.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it blows my mind. I hate the word influencer, and now I'm an influencer. And people always wonder, well, how do I publish a book without a following like yours? And I always clarify, I didn't have a following when I self-published my book. The following came after. When I self-published Money Honey, I didn't have an Instagram. I didn't have an email list. No one knew who I was. I was nobody. So I wrote the book, and then people started following me on Instagram. And then same thing with my second book. I maybe at that time had, I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 people, but still it wasn't like significant like it is now. So now I have 100,000 Instagram followers and like 200,000 TikTok followers. It is crazy to me. I do think most of them have come over time from reading my books. At one point last year, I had one viral Instagram reel. It's the only time it's ever happened to me. And I had like 40,000 new followers in 1 month.
Whoa, that's crazy.
Then I got stage fright and I was like, who are you, new people? What are you doing here? Why are you following me? That was the only time I got a really significant bump. But otherwise, it's grown, you know, very slowly, very organically over the course of 5 years. Yeah.
I think that's the best type of growth too, because it's actually people who read what, you know, you've put out, and like they find something useful and interesting that speaks to them, right? And they're like, oh, she knows something, and that they feel this connection with you, right? And it's great too, because even as a podcast host, people will reach out and like, they have the nicest things sometimes. They say, I'm like, I'm so glad that this helped you. It's really, really, really nice when people reach out. So
It's the best. Yeah, it is so nice because so many of them have already read my book, and so they already like me or feel this kinship.
Some kind of connection. Yeah.
Yes, and so my Instagram is the nicest place. I love everybody. I love my readers. I love my Instagram followers. So yeah, I love that.
Is it weird being a personality at all? Because I struggle with it sometimes because I don't like putting my face on stuff, and I probably could do more, and I just don't, just because it feels weird to be out there.
It is. It is really weird. One of the things I struggle with is sharing where I am. And now I don't share where I am until after the fact because I'm so grateful for it is the thing. Like I'm so flattered that people want to like get to know me and hang out with me and stuff. But I'm very introverted. I don't think people realize that because I'm on Instagram and I'm like here doing these things and videos and talking and smiling. And when I get like these overwhelming amount of messages asking me to hang out or go do stuff, like it kind of makes me anxious.
That's a lot of social time.
Yeah. And I shut down a little bit. So that part makes me anxious. And now just location wise and safety purposes, I just don't share like what city I'm in until after the fact. So that's the only thing that's a little weird. But otherwise, like, yeah, I guess it's just strange and bizarre to think about. But otherwise, it's very flattering and cool.
But this, honestly, I think is the new economy. It is yourself as a brand, right? Going forward. I mean, the economy's not what it used to be. It's no longer I go to the office, I work my 9-to-5 job, I get the promotions for 20 or 30 years and retire with the gold watch. It hasn't been that way for a while. And in fact, it's really going uber micro, in my opinion. And people are, it's who do you follow and who do you want to be like? And who are you influenced by? And it's all web-based and it's through our phones. It's like half the time we don't even talk to people anymore. It's a very weird, interesting world. And I think on not only just from the consumer standpoint, but also from the influencer standpoint too, it's kind of I don't even know what to do with it, to be honest. I don't know where it's going to go. I mean, what do you want to do now that you've published 2 books, you have retired at 27. I mean, you had your whole life ahead of you. What's next for Rachel?
That's a good question. And, you know, we talked a little bit before the interview started about my divorce last year, and that was a really difficult time for me. And I'm so driven and so ambitious, and sometimes it's hard for me to slow down. And I did start writing another book this year, but I've had a hard time feeling connected to my goals and aligned with my goals. And I'm thinking that's a sign that I need to give myself a break and time off that I haven't had in a very long time. So I think this year I want to travel, I want to relax, and I really just want to work on myself. I've learned a lot from the divorce, and I want to relearn like who I am as a person, how can I heal from this and grow from this, and just take this time to myself. So that's hard for me to do though, because I'm always working towards something. And I'm like, maybe I need to work towards becoming the healthiest, happiest version of Rachel that I can be. So that's what I'm really trying to do right now.
Wow. No, thank you for sharing that, honestly. And that kind of hits home for me because I am right there with you of like the, what can I do next? What can I do next? And you get to a point, and this is sort of the view from the other side, because I think a lot of our listeners are like, man, it would be really great to be financially free. And you think all my problems are going to be solved. And you don't really vocalize it this way, but it seems as if there's this mythical hill I'm climbing. And once I get to be financially free, then all these other issues are going to go away, which some do. But at the end of the day, life is life. And there are issues. And, you know, you went through a divorce and we all go through personal situations. And thank you for sharing that, by the way, because it's personal. It's authentic, right? And you don't need to share that with us. But I think sometimes at least I made the mistake of once I'm financially free, then all these things are going to go away. And then at the end of the day, I'm this there by myself. And I'm like, there's still the things that haunt me, the things that bother me, the things that keep me up at night that actually had nothing to do with money. And money can solve so much, right?
Exactly. And I will say from experience that I've been financially free for several years, but last year was the hardest year of my life. Financially free.
Free.
And so
correct.
That doesn't mean anything. And you can be traveling the world and posting stuff on Instagram and, you know, still be a human and still be depressed and really struggling. And, you know, people don't realize that. So I've always tried to be very genuine and transparent about like, look, this is what my life is. This isn't some, well, I'm not faking anything here. And I shared that with my followers and stuff. But yeah, it certainly does not solve all problems. And that's what I'm working on right now is getting back to feeling like myself again. So I'm excited and I am hopeful.
You know, I think the wonderful thing about it is because you are financially free, you can do that.
Oh my God. That is what I was thinking. I posted a reel recently about that exact thing because last year when I first separated from my ex, I booked a one-way ticket to Italy. And because I was like, I'm going to have my eat, pray, love moment, right? Okay, bye. Yeah. But I was thinking that what would I have done if I had a job? Because I could barely, I felt like I was just trying to survive. And I was like, I can't even imagine going through what I went through and adding on top of that, adding financial stress or worrying, how am I going to make it to my next paycheck or worrying about having to pay bills? Because the pain was consuming and the grief. And I just was so grateful to have the privilege of being able to run away and escape and heal. And just, I went on a 2-month trip to Italy without having to worry for a second about my financials. And what a freaking blessing. And if there's anything I learned from that, it's that, yeah, we want to achieve financial independence so that we can quit our jobs and travel the world. And that's really fun. And that's really exciting. But what about when shit happens in your life and you lose your job or someone gets cancer or you get cancer or your kid dies or you get a divorce, something awful happens. How are you going to survive that? And if you don't think financial independence is for you, I am here to give you that wake up call. Everyone needs financial security for when these moments in life happen, because they're unavoidable and there's no running away from them. So we all need to get to this point so that we can survive through them without having to have these worries.
I just got chills when you were talking. And that's why I do this show too, right? Because I think for our listeners, it is entirely possible and you can get there faster because you don't have the same constraints a lot of times when you're overseas that people do in the States. And the key is really taking that advantage and seeing what can I do now? And it doesn't have to be full-time even. It doesn't have to be, you know, all consuming. It's just a little bit on the margins. What can you do today? What can you do the next day? It adds up. And then at some point, you know, because a lot of our listeners, they've got great jobs, great salaries, you know, great retirement benefits. And it's just it's a matter of taking a little bit of time because, hey, sassy and personal finance, it can be fun. And, you know, making that time and saying, hey, what can I do with this? And making sure that that's all shored up. It is so worth the time. And I've had similar experiences of where I am super grateful that I'm like, at least I don't have the financial piece to worry about because there's a whole lot of other stuff that is going on in life, which happens to all of us, right? And that's one less worry. And it's a big worry for people. It's a big worry for a lot of people. And if you can remove that, why not?
Exactly. And you don't have to quit your job. You don't have to have 10 grand a month in passive income. But I am betting that an extra $1,000 or $2,000 a month in passive income would change your life and at the very least give you some peace of mind.
Completely. Well, Rachel, I don't want to take too much of your time because I know you're, well, I won't say a busy lady because you are busy, you know, taking care of yourself and doing all the nice things. But I've really appreciated talking with you today. Thank you for being so authentic and sharing your story. And, you know, not only sharing just like the techniques and the tips, but also some of your personal background and like, you know, why it's important, right? Because I think we can do all the things on the checklist, but at the end of the day, is it making your life better? And is it helping you and your family? And is it benefiting you, right? I think those are the really key things. So, and there's a lot of different paths to get there. So thank you for sharing your story with us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for allowing me to. I appreciate it.
And where can people find more about you?
Thank you. Yeah, my Instagram is Money Honey Rachel, and both of my books are on Amazon in ebook, paperback, and audio. They're Money Honey and Passive Income Aggressive Retirement. And what I'd love to do for your listeners is if anyone listening wants to download my Passive Income Starter Kit, I will give that for free. So you can go to moneyhoneyrachel.com/passive-income to download that.
Thank you. They'll appreciate it. And she has some pretty cool budgeting worksheets too, just FYI.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give that. Yeah. Budgeting worksheets. You can also go to moneyhoneyrachel.com/worksheets.
Look at that. Free gifts. Well, yay. Rachel, thank you so much. And best of luck with one-way tickets to Italy and rediscovering all of the fun things that you can do in life. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
If you like this episode and want more, make sure to give us 5 stars on the podcast player of your choice. And after that, check out our Facebook page. From there, you can learn about our other episodes, connect with our guests, and of course, share your own ideas for success. We'll see you next time.